If you appreciate Issues Etc., Talk Radio for the Thinking Christian, and Lutheran Public Radio, Sacred Music for the World, please include a bequest in your will or trust for these worldwide media resources. Bequests aren't subject to federal tax or capital gains taxes. Ensure your children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren the opportunity to listen by including a bequest in your will or trust for Issues Etc. and Lutheran Public Radio.
I think getting out of the framework of thinking that the problem with the media is that they are biased, when really the problems are much, much deeper and evidence much more corruption that is industry-wide.
Two theological positions that are not compatible. If you can allow both of those to stand within the synod, then 10 years to 15 years later, the question will be, what about a third position or a fourth position or a fifth position?
It's amazing how they can speak the Lord's Prayer or the Creed, and yet they can't even tell you what they did that day. We have to keep these rituals in a very constant and familiar fashion.
Paul receives everything as a gift from him, and it makes him, in a profound way, it makes him devil-proof.
Hi, this is Terry and Jan from Illinois. Volunteer laborers at Lutheran church camps love Issues Etc.
Here is the headline from the BBC. David McAreth, Christian doctor, loses trans beliefs case. A doctor who refused to use transgender pronouns as people's chosen sex as it went against his Christian faith has lost his tribunal. This is not an isolated case. A man losing a job for refusing to, from his perspective, to lie about someone's gender or someone's sex. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Friday afternoon, October the 4th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking about this tribunal ruling against a British doctor who refused to use transgender pronouns. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery will be our guest. We're going to spend some time with Dr. Steve Turner, president of the Iowa West District for the Lutheran Church of Missouri Synod, talking about the murder of a Lutheran pastor in Fort Dodge, Iowa. Pastor Chris Rosebro is with us after that. For our feature this week in Pop Christianity, we'll talk about the church planting movement leader Phil Pringle and selling miracles. Then it's Issues Etc. soundbite of the week. We've got four soundbites for your consideration this week to play for you. And after you've listened, your vote will decide which will be soundbite of the week. We have one from Rebecca Curtis responding to the old adage, the church is just a building. Another from Dr. Mary Eberstadt talking about the confusion of white nationalism with the pro-life movement. Dr. Matt Richard has a soundbite on how Lutherans become Baptists. And Pastor Hans Feeney has soundbite number four, Carson King and social media forgiveness. You can vote in advance at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc, or wait and give us a call, 1-877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet at issuesetc. Joining us to talk about a tribunal ruling against a British doctor who refused to use transgender pronouns, Dr. John Warwick Montgomery. He's emeritus professor at the University of Bedfordshire in England, a French advocate, a barrister at law in England and Wales, and a member of the bar of the Supreme Court of the United States. He is professor at large with 1517, the Legacy Project, director of the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights, and author and editor of more than 50 books, including Defending the Gospel in Legal Style. Dr. Montgomery, welcome back.
Thank you. Glad to be back.
Is there a British version of the First Amendment? And if so, how does it differ, if at all, from the American version?
Well, there isn't any British Bill of Rights. And up until a generation ago, the traditional English suspicion of anything that was not politically correct pretty well prevailed. But a generation ago, the UK ratified the European Convention on Human Rights. And that has a very, very strong statement on freedom of speech, Article 10 of the European Convention, and that is applied specifically to religious beliefs in Article 9. And therefore, now the UK is compelled to accord with that standard. This means that if, as in the case of this doctor, he loses all the way to the Supreme Court of the UK, He can go to Strasbourg, and in my view, he's going to win. Most civilized countries, such as Canada, in the case of Christians who will not practice abortion and will not go along with transgender stuff, are allowed to practice, of course, and other people, non-Christians, are given those cases, the cases that the Christians don't want. The idea is that a person shouldn't be compelled professionally to violate his or her beliefs. And the easy answer to this is simply not forcing a nurse who is against abortion to participate in an abortion. All right? But in England, there is a long English tradition of political correctness. The English are really much less tolerant than the Americans or the French for beliefs that they think are against their own value system, whatever that happens to be.
So tell us the case of Dr. David McAreth there in Great Britain and his situation.
Well, this doctor is obviously a crusty fellow, and he said that he would refuse to refer any 6-foot-tall bearded man as madam. In other words, he is anti-transgender language, and he was perfectly willing to treat medically a transgender person, but he was not willing to treat that person linguistically as of a woman if the person was physiologically a man, all right? And as a result of this, he was discharged. And when this went to an internal panel, this is the DWP, the Department of Work and Pensions, they upheld the action against him, and they said, and I quote, "A lack of belief in transgenderism and conscientious objection to transgenderism, in our judgment, are incompatible," that should be, is incompatible, "with human dignity and conflicts with the fundamental rights of others." Now, this, of course, is a lot of nonsense, and the English have because of social background and the rest of it, often been willing to compromise basic freedoms on the ground that otherwise there might be an offense to others. There is the famous joke of the two English arriving on a narrow bridge, one from one direction, one from the other, and they are skeletons. And the reason is each one is said to the other, "After you." And that kind of mentality in the absence of a national First Amendment produces this kind of nonsense.
Under British law, you say that there's a lot of tradition attached here. Under British law, you said that he might go all the way to the British Supreme Court. What would you expect to happen there, given the complexion of their court?
Well, this is hard to say. A generation ago, the Supreme Court would have upheld the doctor's position. There's no question about that. When at the top level of the English judiciary were solid Christian believers, Lord Diplock, Lord Denning, and so on. Nowadays, unfortunately, it's not the same situation. There is a British judge who, for example, upheld the discharge of a British psychologist who would not treat people as transsexual, and therefore there is certainly an atmosphere in England in favor of political correctness, which is very unfortunate. What I was actively teaching when I had my active professorship at the University of Bedfordshire in England, on one instance, I defended before the DWP a colleague of mine on an analogous kind of situation. I won in this case, but it was very difficult. I was dealing with people who were so narrow-minded that they could see through a keyhole with both eyes simultaneously. It really was an unfortunate situation. And just a couple of years ago, when I delivered a paper at the World Congress for the Philosophy of Law and Social Policy with the title, A Non-Politically Correct Response to Muslim Terrorist Immigration. This paper was refused publication in a volume of essays published in England. Of course, it was published elsewhere. There was no problem with that. But there is a definite tendency toward violations of freedom of speech, freedom of expression in England, and this is sad. I mean, I happen to be a naturalized UK citizen, and it pains me to see this, but there's no doubt about it that there is a tendency toward the repression of free speech, and this comes down especially on Christians. And the particular irony of this is, of course, that there is an established church in England. The Anglican Church is the Reformed branch of the Holy Catholic Church established in this kingdom, and the Queen is the head of that church. But the fact of the matter is that there is a great deal of prejudice in the English context, and it's very difficult for Christians at the present time.
And why do you say that if this were to go to Strasbourg, to the International Court of Human Rights, I believe that this doctor in Great Britain would win his case?
Well, the likelihood is that the judges there would look at this against the background of the European Convention or Treaty on Human Rights. Just as American judges use the Bill of Rights, so the European judges use the European Convention. And as I mentioned, there is an article specifically dealing with freedom of speech and an article specifically dealing with freedom of religion. And it would appear to me that the judges would apply those articles to this case. Now, they might say that in order to allow for national sovereignty in areas like this, that there can be national laws that would prevent hiring a doctor in the first place who took views like this doctor did. But as far as the freedom of speech, as far as his right to refuse to use masculine pronouns for a woman or female pronouns for a man, that kind of thing cannot be prohibited. And that in itself couldn't possibly be a sufficient reason for him to lose his position.
Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is our guest. He's director of the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights. We'll find out whether or not this is, in fact, a case of compelled speech after this. Gospel reductionism replaces the Bible as the source and norm of theology with the gospel. What would a gospel reductionist edition of Luther's Small Catechism look like? Find out in the latest issues, etc. journal. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Dr. Russell Dawn details his journey from Anglicanism to Lutheranism. The free online Issues Etc. journal, issuesetc.org.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills, too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the gift of Latin today. To order, visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR20. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Holy Cross Evangelical Lutheran Church, Albany, Oregon, is a mid-Willamette Valley LCMS congregation where the liturgy lives and God's people worship as one, with sound biblical doctrine, weekly communion, and a clear confession of Christ crucified for the sin of the world. Please join us at 2515 Queen Avenue Southeast or visit our website at www.holycrosslutheranalbany.org.
Did you know that many LCMS military personnel and their families are unable to receive Word and Sacrament ministry due to the lack of LCMS chaplains? Ministry to the Armed Forces is looking for pastors who will answer the call to serve as a chaplain to provide Word and Sacrament ministry to the men and women who selflessly serve our nation. Find out more about this exciting ministry by contacting me, Chaplain Craig Mueller, at lcmschaps@lcms.org. That is lcmschaps@lcms.org.
The church is not an abstraction. It's a real place. And that is, of course, necessary because of the way the Lord meets us. He meets us in His Word and Sacrament. He meets us through physical means. And that means we have to have a place to go to receive them.
If the pro-lifers had had their way, America would be a browner and blacker place than it is today. And the progressive people who have had their way on abortion ever since Roe v. Wade are creating a whiter America.
If I take a practice from, let's just say, a Baptist church, and I incorporate that into a Lutheran church, I'm actually incorporating a Baptist practice that is birthed out of Baptist theology.
We should very much avoid saying that we need to forgive him, because all that does is legitimize the mob and convince the mob that we must have some kind of authority over him or that he owes us an apology. He doesn't owe us anything.
That's just a taste of the four sound bites we've prepared for Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. At the end of the program, we'll play them in their entirety. And after you have heard them, your votes will decide which will be Soundbite of the Week. In the meantime, we're talking about a tribunal ruling against a British doctor who refused to use transgender pronouns. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is our guest, international human rights attorney. Dr. Montgomery, is this, in fact, at this point, with this ruling, a case of compelled speech?
Oh, of course it is. And this kind of thing raises its ugly head even in the States. I mean, you've got situations at some Eastern universities, Harvard, for example, where there are sort of free speech zones, but people are not supposed to say anything that can be offensive to others in other contexts. And it's unbelievable that this kind of thing can go on. It's hard for me to quote Voltaire, the French philosopher of the 18th century, positively, but he understood the dangers to free speech in situations like this, and he made the very famous and marvelous statement, "I disagree with what you say, but I will defend to the death your right to say it." And it seems to me that's the kind of approach we ought to take. The fact that someone makes a statement that is hurtful or offensive to someone else does not give that offended person the right to keep the other person from expressing himself. The fact of the matter is that we ought to be adults in a civilized society. And that means that we have to put up with offensive statements and statements that we disagree with. And if not, we are regarding our population as children, as children who can't make their own decisions in regard to belief systems and the like. And this is an extremely dangerous situation when the state becomes a kind of nanny that is going to keep people from being offended. Heavens, for most people, it wouldn't hurt in the least to be offended once a week. It might get them to do some serious thinking. And as a Christian believer, I don't mind at all to have atheists and agnostics and people of other religious positions express themselves. I like to get that out into the open. If that's out into the open, then it can be criticized. And then it's possible to strive to arrive at a religious position which is based on solid fact and therefore is worth believing in. We don't want people believing things just because that makes them feel good, and they won't allow anything else because it offends them.
Philosophically, Dr. Montgomery, and I agree with you, there's not a lot of thinking going on in the movement that is basically saying, if I regard myself or identify myself as a female when I am in fact biologically a male, you are compelled to refer to me by my chosen gender in pronouns, in my name, all of these things. Looking at this from your perspective of long thought, both legally and philosophically, what do you make of that situation?
Well, I think it's really unfortunate. Now, the doctor in this case wasn't the most tactful person who ever lived, right? I mean, to say that when he encounters a 6-foot-tall bearded man, he doesn't have to call this person Mrs. or Madam or something of that kind. I mean, you don't want to be unnecessarily offensive at all. And I think it's probably unfortunate that he said something like that. But the fact of the matter is that this is a knife that cuts both ways. We must not be put in a position where we are forced linguistically or in any other way to make statements that are contrary to our fundamental beliefs. Therefore, in speaking of Islam, for example, I must never be forced to say, oh, those terrorists are really just extremists and they don't represent a basic Muslim position. The fact of the matter is that they do represent a basic Muslim position consistent with Sharia law and with the Quran, and for that reason, I am going to state it in exactly those terms. And as I mentioned, when I did so in this scholarly paper that was presented at the World Congress on Philosophy of Law and Social Policy with no problems, it was bothersome to English academics, and so they wouldn't publish the thing. That kind of thing will move on into every area of life. So finally, nobody dares say anything that could possibly offend anybody else. And once that happens, we lose all ability at critical thinking.
So a lot of this has affected, you mentioned academics, a lot of this has affected the social sciences deeply. And it appears that the social sciences have abandoned the science of human sexuality in favor of this politically correct framework. Why is there so little science in the social sciences?
That's exactly what's gone on. The fact of the matter is there is powerful scientific evidence against transgenderism. And the published material on this, the genuine scientific material, has shown again and again that this is a false concept, and it's something which, when it's implemented medically, for example, causes immense harm. But but unhappily, today people are not as interested in what is the case, what is really true, what is factually the situation. They are far more interested in social peace and quiet and everybody feeling good. You can see this, one illustration of this is the Obergefell case before the U.S. Supreme Court that legalized same-sex marriage. If you read the majority opinion in that case, what the majority is saying there is that if we don't allow this, there are going to be unhappy people. There are going to be people who are not enjoying themselves, and the law ought to help people to feel better. Now, this is a lot of nonsense. The function of the law has never been to make people feel better. The function of the law has been to keep sinners from eating each other. That's what the law is doing. And it can't save anybody, and following it, no matter how much huffing and puffing you engage in, is not only not going to save you, it's not even going to make you feel better. The fact of the matter is that we have got to understand the proper function of law in a society and the proper function of scientific fact. And if these things go in a certain direction and we don't like it and it's socially obnoxious to us, tough on us, not tough on reality. Reality is still going to be there.
I guess in terms of the legal standpoint of this debate, both in the United States and in Great Britain, do you believe, at least with regard to the legal structures, that we've kind of passed the point of no return, that this is a permanent feature in what people want the law, civil law, to do for them?
Well, it's certainly what people want the civil law to do in general today. I think there's no doubt about that. But in the Obergefell decision, you have dissenting opinions expressed. And the Chief Justice, Roberts, his dissenting opinion is absolutely marvelous and solid in every sense of the word. And that gives me hope. That means that if the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States still understands how this kind of thing ought to be treated, I do think that there's hope. And it will come primarily through Christians in the law, Christians as judges, who are willing to stand up for their beliefs. And one of the reasons why it's so important to not have elected judges or judges that have limited terms is so that when we get some Christian judges, they can go ahead without fear or favor and present views which certainly are not politically correct and may very well bother people.
We're talking with Dr. John Warwick Montgomery of 1517 The Legacy Project about a tribunal ruling against a British doctor who refused to use transgender pronouns. The Issues Etc., a book of the month for October, brings together a dearly loved devotional resource, Portals of Prayer, and the English Standard Version of the Bible. It's called Portals of Prayer Devotional Bible. It has over 700 Portals of Prayer devotions incorporated into this devotional Bible. You can find out more about the Portals of Prayer Devotional Bible at our website, issuesetc.org. Call Concordia Publishing House. They'd be happy to send you a copy. 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040. Ask for the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for October. On the other side of the break, we'll have Dr. Montgomery explain the rapidity with which the legal landscape has changed on the transgender issue.
Lutheran Federal Credit Union was formed to serve the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod community with mortgage and auto loans, checking and savings accounts, credit and debit cards. Lutheran FCU's Ministry of the Month for October is Lutheran Education Association. When you use your Lutheran FCU credit card for a qualifying amount of purchases, they'll give you cash back and give that same amount of money to Lutheran Education Association. Learn more at LutheranFCU.org. Good for you, good for the church. Lutheran Federal Credit Union, LutheranFCU.org.
The new Portals of Prayer Devotional Bible is the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for October. This devotional resource contains the entire English Standard Version of the Bible with 700 devotions from Portals of Prayer. Browse before you buy at issuesetc.org or learn more about Portals of Prayer Devotional Bible by calling Concordia Publishing House weekdays during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for October, Portals of Prayer Devotional Bible.
You're invited to Oktoberfest featuring the Waterloo German Band Friday night, October 18th at St. Paul Lutheran School in Hamel, Illinois. Oktoberfest features a traditional German buffet dinner, silent and oral auctions, and of course, beer. Tickets are $15. Attendance is limited to 200. Proceeds benefit St. Paul Lutheran School, the only classical Lutheran school in Greater St. Louis. Learn more and purchase tickets at school.stpaulhamel.org. Oktoberfest is sponsored in part by Seavers Equipment, Lutheran Church Extension Fund, Ernst Heating and Cooling, Lutheran Public Radio, St. Paul's Ladies Aid, Chick-fil-A, and Baker Construction. Oktoberfest, Friday night, October 18th at St. Paul Lutheran School in Hamel, Illinois. School.stpaulhamel.org.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Atonement Lutheran, Glendale, Arizona. Our Redeemer Lutheran, Emmett, Idaho. Grace Lutheran, Racine, Wisconsin. St. Paul Lutheran, Bridgeport, Nebraska. Our Savior Lutheran, Elizabeth, Colorado, Calvary Lutheran, Indianapolis, Indiana, St. John Lutheran, Ray, Michigan, Bethlehem Lutheran, Sylvan Grove, Kansas, and St. Paul Lutheran, Sevierville, Tennessee. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your church on the radio, at the website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is our guest. We're talking about a tribunal ruling against a British doctor who refused to use transgender pronouns. Dr. Montgomery, with your long legal perspective, how would you go about explaining the rapidity with which the legal landscape has changed both here in America and in Great Britain with respect to the LGBTQ agenda, same-sex marriage, and transgenderism?
I think it's due to the deterioration of pre-legal education to the point where when the student arrives in law school, he no longer arrives with a good knowledge of the classics, a good understanding of logic, an ability to reason, and probably some courses in the sciences. The person arriving in law school today is often someone who has taken business, whatever that possibly can mean, taken business, sociology, education, weak courses that have never taught the person to think properly, and therefore this has contaminated the law schools. If the American education system were immensely more classic and far less sociological, there would be much more of a chance that law school could do what it ought to do.
Is that true in Great Britain as well?
Yes, it is. It's exactly the same situation. In some ways, England is the elephant's graveyard of American heresies. See, the irony of it is that American society and American education have their origins in England, very largely. But as things have developed, as the U.S. has become the most important world power, the influence has gone back to England, but by that time, the American influence has been a deleterious influence and has caused much weakening. Progressive education, for example, reached England a generation after John Dewey and his ilk contaminated the American scene. This is one of the reasons, by the way, why France is in better shape along these lines, because France has insisted upon classical education and a much more serious public school system.
The DWP, the Department for Work and Pensions, in their judgment against this doctor in Great Britain, wrote the following, and I would like your response as though you had an opportunity to defend this man's case. Here's what they wrote. A lack of belief in transgenderism and conscientious objection to transgenderism in our judgment are incompatible with human dignity and conflict with the fundamental rights of others. How would you respond?
Well, for one thing, one would have to have some kind of a justification of human dignity in order to make a statement like this. Where does the DWP get its concept of human dignity? It gets it from contemporary sociology. And in the 1930s, that's exactly how Germany acquired Nazi philosophy and the Third Reich's racist approaches from a sociological perspective. The only way you're ever going to establish human dignity is to find some absolute foundation for it. And you can't get an absolute foundation from human opinion. Water doesn't rise above its own level. And what we have to do is to see if God Almighty has revealed to us what human dignity actually means. And if that's the case, then we've got to derive our understandings of gender, as well as everything else, from God's word and not from human opinion. And when the EWP says this is a conflict with fundamental rights of others, that suggests that you mustn't ever do anything that would offend the other person. That rights are, fundamental rights are somehow defined by what might possibly offend somebody else. And this is perfect nonsense. That isn't how rights have ever been defined in the French Declaration of the Rights of Man and the U.S. Bill of Rights, etc. You never have definitions of that kind. What you have are attempts to relate actual human character to what human beings should be allowed to do with the character that they actually have. And that's why, throughout human history, for goodness sake, marriage has been between a man and a woman. And once you begin to blur these distinctions between male and female, for goodness sake, the end result ultimately is going to be that you're going to be blending the characteristics of humans with the characteristics of the animal population, and ultimately I'm going to be able to marry a hippopotamus, as long as the hippopotamus doesn't have a really good lawyer.
Finally, Dr. Montgomery, you're the international director of the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights, held annually in Strasbourg, France. Tell us about the 2020 Academy.
Well, this is a particularly strong session that's coming up in July. And we have half of the places already taken, by the way, and that means that it's extremely important that people who are listening to this program get their registrations in as soon as possible, because we could only take 20 registrants each summer. And this summer we have not only Professor Craig Parton, who appears on Issues Etc. frequently, and my humble self as lecturers, but also Donald Williams, who has his PhD from the University of Georgia, went to Trinity Evangelical Divinity School, and he is the president of the Evangelical Apologetic Association, has written extensively on C.S. Lewis, and one of the courses that he'll be giving is on C.S. Lewis. And we have Carrie Kuehn, K-U-E-H-N, PhD from the University of California in engineering and physics, and he teaches at Wisconsin Lutheran College and has published extensively in the area of physics and related scientific areas from a Christian standpoint. For example, a student's guide through the great physics texts. These four lecturers are presenting nine courses. These courses cover the entire gamut of areas of apologetics today: biblical apologetics, philosophical, scientific, historical, literary, and so on. And the object is to make sure that every one of the students knows how to answer the major objections to Christian faith in these areas and has the best kind of case for Jesus Christ. The emphasis is on the defense of the gospel itself. It isn't on arguing or philosophy as such. And the program is now in its 24th year, almost a quarter of a century. And over 400 people have taken this program and have benefited from it. So we strongly advise the listeners to this Issues Etc. broadcast, because they're on our wavelength, to get in touch with us and to register as soon as possible. It takes place in Strasbourg, France, in the French Rhineland. It's not expensive. It's less than a Hawaii vacation, and it certainly is the kind of emphasis that every one of us needs in presenting the gospel today.
Learn more about the 2020 International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is Emeritus Professor at the University of Bedfordshire in England. He's a French advocate, a barrister at law in England and Wales, and a member of the Bar of the Supreme Court of the United States. He's Professor at Large with 1517, the Legacy Project, Director of the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights, and author and editor of more than 50 books, including Defending the Gospel in Legal Style. Dr. Montgomery, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
We will be talking about the murder of a Lutheran pastor in Fort Dodge, Iowa, with Dr. Steve Turner, president of the Iowa West District of the Lutheran Church of Missouri Synod, right after the break.
What is the Lutheran Witness? Simple. It's a monthly magazine on faith and life, theology and culture that helps readers interpret the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective. Filled with expert insights, good writing, and inspiring stories, it also provides essential church information for LCMS members. What is the Lutheran Witness? Simple. It's the flagship periodical of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and it has been for more than a century. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth. Luther Academy, 260-452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Do you long for a church where the gospel of the sinner's free justification is front and center, and yet where a robust sacramental life is confessed and lived? Do you long for a church that rejoices in the sacred scriptures as the sole basis for the church's teaching and proclamation, yet values and listens to the witness of the ancient fathers and councils? Welcome to the Lutheran Church. We're what you've been looking for. Find a Christ-centered, cross-focused church near you on the Find the Church page at issuesetc.org.
Oh Lord, open my lips.
Listen to chapel services live, weekday mornings from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Make haste, O God, to deliver me.
Morning Chapel from Kramer Chapel. Live weekday mornings at 9 Central, 10 Eastern, 8 Mountain, and 7 Pacific at issuesetc.org.